This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Let's go back to 2008 when Hillary Clinton conceded to Barack Obama in the race for the Democratic nomination for president.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it. Is shining through like never before, filling us all with the hope and the sure knowledge that the path will be a little easier next time.
Now, fast forward to last month in Philadelphia when Mrs. Clinton noted that with her nomination for president, the nation had reached a milestone in its march toward a more perfect union.
Standing here as my mother's daughter and my daughter's mother, I'm so happy this day has come. I'm happy for grandmothers and little girls and everyone in between. I'm happy for boys and men, because when any barrier falls in America, it clears the way for everyone. After all, when there are no ceilings, the sky's the limit.
When Barack Obama became the first African-American presidential nominee and later president, there was much discussion on what this would mean for race relations and for the ability of African-Americans to get ahead. And now that conversation has shifted to women. What does Hillary Clinton's progress mean for other women in politics, in business, in other life paths traditionally dominated by men? Will this open the door for them or result in the kind of backlash some have seen as the result of Barack Obama's success? Will America heed Hillary Clinton's admonition?
So let's keep going. Let's keep going until every one of the 161 million women and girls across America has the opportunity she deserves to have.
Here to talk about that is Kelly Finley, senior lecturer and undergraduate advisor in the Women's and Gender Studies program at UNC Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Dr. Dawn Chandler is associate professor of management at the McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Mary C. Curtis is back with us. She's a journalist and columnist at Roll Call and NBC BLK, as well as a contributor to NPR's Code Switch. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here again, Mike.
Well, if you'd like to join our conversation, and I'm sure you will, as we go through it, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We had a conversation in the aftermath of the Barack Obama election about the possibilities that election posed for the country. Would we be entering now into a post-racial society? And nothing of the kind happened, but we had the conversation anyway, and many would argue there was, in fact, a significant backlash to President Obama becoming president. Does Hillary Clinton's nomination now and her possible election in November usher in a post-sexist, a more feminist society, or will we witness another backlash?
Well, I was in the room in that arena in Philadelphia when she accepted and the balloons dropped. And it's important. It was an important moment and a moving one, just as I felt when I was 2008 in Denver with Barack Obama. Yes, it's an important and achievement for her and a wonderful symbol for our society. And I think we have to start out by saying that. But just as though Barack Obama's presidency did not make racial tensions in America disappear, her candidacy and maybe presidency won't make sexism disappear or harassment or equal pay issues. In fact, just as in Obama's case, she is a pioneer and we will see that pushback. But I think we have to pause and say, just as there are children who know just an African-American president, there will be children growing up and young women now who see this milestone and say, yes, this is a great example for our society to follow.
I want to come back to the idea of pushback in a second, because I think we've seen some people would tell you that we have seen significant pushback with Barack Obama. Dr. Chandler, you say Hillary's nomination is historic and overdue. How many people do you think would agree with you.
Oh, well, I would hope most people would agree with me. It, you know, 250 years we've waited for this opportunity, and the time has come. And it is a historic moment, and one that we should all be excited about, regardless of which party affiliation we belong to. In the business sphere, I will say that in spite of this excitement, there still are some fairly dismal numbers around women leadership. Specifically, women are only at the head, CEOs of about 5% of the Fortune 500, and S&P 500, they still make up about 15% of all corporate board positions and are still at about, it depends on where you go, but about 17% of the upper echelons in organizations. And a recent study by, collaborative study by the McKinsey and Company and leanin.org suggested that at this rate of advancement, it will still take about 100 years to achieve parity with gender.
Well, we're late coming to the table. There have been female prime ministers. Well, Margaret Thatcher was President Reagan's contemporary in England years ago. We have the head of Germany. We've had heads of state in India, other countries. Why has it taken women so long to reach this position in the United States of America, where all men and presumably women are created equal?
Well, I mean, running for office is a difficult and arduous task and an expensive task. And, you know, actually back in 1887, Elizabeth Cady Stanton was the first woman to run for office. So there have been women, all the way to Shirley Chisholm of 1972, who ran for the Democratic nomination, who have been pushing at the ceiling and, you know, making these small cracks. But man or woman, regardless of gender, running for office is a difficult task. And so, you know, I think one of the things is, yes, it's significant that Clinton is the first woman nominated for the major party ticket as president, but we should look back and look at all the shoulders she's standing on of women who have been serving in office and local governors, state legislatures, et cetera, and we shouldn't underplay that. Although, yes, only 20% of women are in Congress.
Well, we have you mentioned how difficult and how expensive it is to run for the presidency in this country, and we have an extraordinarily long campaign season. It begins the day after the election for the next 4 years, it seems. Is that why it's taken so long? Is it easier to achieve in a parliamentary system rather than a presidential system? None of you are political scientists, so maybe that's an unfair question, but is it easier to achieve in that situation? Because their campaigns are overnight, practically.
Well, I mean, overall with this election, it's been really interesting where the parties have been accustomed to controlling who the candidate is and have been accustomed to controlling the convention process. And so Trump, on his side, has obliterated all expectations and the old boys club, if you will, within the Republican Party. Clinton has come up through the ranks, has paid her dues, and is being, you know, is bestowed the nomination for the Democratic Party, as well as the support of many other senators, et cetera. So that took a long time. And, you know, that's something to keep in mind. It's not just the elections. It's the infrastructure of the party politics that have been in control.
President Obama, in his endorsement at the convention of Hillary Clinton, said that she is the single most qualified person, man or woman, to ever run for president. Is that true? And if so, what makes it so? She was obviously Secretary of State for 4 years. She was a New York senator. She was the First Lady of the United States for 8 years, the First Lady of Arkansas. She's been involved in various organizations and charities and trying to create things that work. She did the Children's Medical Relief Fund, I don't know what it's called, in Arkansas. She tried to establish Obamacare when it was called Hillary Care back in the 1990s. Does that make her the most qualified person? Because you look at, like, John Kerry. He's the Secretary of State. He's been in the Senate forever. Is it a true statement?
Well, I think just as when an African-American goes up for a job, they have to have an incredibly impeccable resume. The fact that the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, would say, well, she's just playing the woman card. This is someone who doesn't have any political experience, and would say that about someone with that kind of resume. is saying that there's still problems with how a woman is judged.
Well, that's the pot calling the kettle black.
I do think that this president wanted to make sure that people were aware of that strong resume. And it certainly even goes back to when she was a student leader at Wellesley, working with the Children's Defense Fund with Marion Wright Edelman. She and her husband, Peter Edelman, were at the convention. I spoke with them. And so it just was saying, you know, she has this long record of public service. As she would say, she's more comfortable with the service than the public piece.
And did he have to spell that out because Hillary Clinton is a woman, or would he have spelled that out for Bill Clinton, if Bill Clinton had been his Secretary of State?
I think he was aware of the history as well. And part of it is because Hillary Clinton not only is a woman, but she is Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And so many people have this idea of who this person is. So it was almost reintroducing, a reminder, whatever you know or think you know about Hillary Clinton, these are things this woman has done.
She is Hillary Clinton, all caps, writ large.
Yes.
and that comes with an enormous amount of baggage, some justified, some not, some made up. So how does that alter the rules at play in this campaign for her? Because she is well known, and people have preconceived notions about who she is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that people will have to they do have these ideas of who this person is. And so that's why she is trying to, in her ads and in her endorsements, remind people of her accomplishments. She's been helped by this in some of the things her opponent has said, mm-hmm. and she just lets him sort of self-destruct. But also things like on the issue of national security, where they say that women usually aren't tough enough. And now she has the endorsements of people who say she was in that room making the decision about Osama bin Laden to go after him. And that actually we have this recent letter by all these national security heads saying that she is the one that has the strength. So we see them very specifically going after these qualities that they usually say women are weak at. Mm-hmm. And saying that this woman is strong.
Well, let's talk about that, because in the past, when women have run for any office, but particularly for president, and there have been other women who've tried to run for president, women could not be too aggressive, otherwise the B word would be attached mm-hmm. to them. They had to be even more confident or portray more confidence than men. Their voices couldn't be too high-pitched, otherwise they would be called hysterical. In this contest, are all those rules out the window because of the presence of Donald Trump?
No, they're not. It's interesting. I mean, every woman within the sound of my voice knows the Academy Award-winning performance of being qualified, competent, professional, but likable, approachable, and trustworthy. And you really do deserve an award for this performance. And so what it seems to come down to, as Mary indicated, is Clinton is well-qualified, overqualified, if not one of the most qualified candidates in history. But it's this likability factor. And likability almost becomes this covert test of, you know, of sexism. But the interesting thing, though, Mike, to your point, is we do see a flip of the gender script where Trump is a hysterical one. Mm-hmm. Trump is the crazy one. Trump is the emotional one who loses his temper, and you're afraid he will do with the red button. And this is a series of criteria that would usually be held at women running for office.
When we come back, I want to talk to you, Dr. Chandler, about if these same rules that we just talked about with regard to women running for office apply to people moving up the corporate ladder. Mm-hmm. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Iron Yard, using tech-focused education to create growth and mentorship for people and their ideas. Enrollment available for 12-week courses dedicated to teaching code and more in Charlotte. Information at theironyard.com/Charlotte. And the Blue Ridge Music Center, featuring the Lonesome River Band, Jerry Douglas and Allison Krauss, performing in an outdoor amphitheater on the Blue Ridge Parkway, mile marker 213. Tickets at blueridgemusiccenter.com. CivicJustice.org. Hacking is a reality in this digital world in which we live. Recently, hackers penetrated the Democratic National Committee's emails and again raised questions about the vulnerability of the technology we use in our elections and our everyday lives, for that matter. What are the weak links in the nation's cybersecurity, and what can you do to avoid being an unwitting actor in these attacks? We hear from a pair, actually three, local experts about that on this program tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, after a rocky few weeks for his campaign, Donald Trump releases his new economic plan. Analysis of his proposals on taxes, trade, and financial regulation, and how he's distinguishing himself from Hillary Clinton.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 to noon, after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Mary C. Curtis, journalist and columnist, Kelly Finley, senior lecturer and undergraduate advisor in the Women and Gender Studies program at UNC Charlotte, and Dr. Dawn Chandler, associate professor of management at the McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte, about the glass ceiling and what, if anything, Hillary Clinton's nomination to be president on the Democratic ticket means for glass ceilings in politics and outside of politics. And we just spoke before the break about some of the unspoken rules that women have to follow if they're running for political office so that they don't appear hysterical, so that they do appear in command and competent, and so that they don't appear to be too much of a bee. Although a man can get away with it, women cannot for some reason. Is the same thing true in the business world?
Absolutely. The women have historically faced a number of different barriers to, quote, advancement, including this double bind, too aggressive, not aggressive enough. How are you going to be labeled? They lack sponsorship for senior positions. They lack access to informal networks. They lack role models.
Is that because the guys won't let them in to these informal networks? It's an old boys. Yeah. They want to feel comfortable having a beer, yeah, taking it back and saying things they shouldn't say.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, Mike. Actually, there's a sociological principle called homophily. Homo meaning same, philly meaning like. People just tend to reach out to people who are like themselves. So women tend to gravitate toward women. Men tend to gravitate toward men. And so it just is a comfort factor that men would tend to be in part of the old boys network together. And it leaves women without sufficient sponsorship relationships because there are few women at the top still, so they're having trouble breaking through to that.
So what does it say about the Hillary Clintons and the Lynn Goods and the Carly Fiorinas of the world that they have had such remarkable success in this men's club?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is they've been very smart about developing these strong social networks and taking advantage of the strong sponsors that they do have.
But I also think that they have to be very flexible and change strategies. And they've have had obstacles as well. You saw it in 2008 when Hillary Clinton did not emphasize the fact that she was going to be, you know, her gender and some of those issues. It was, I'm tough enough to take that phone call, because she was, in a way, overcompensating. It's interesting to me.
But is it also perhaps because he was breaking a glass ceiling and she was breaking a glass ceiling, both different ceilings, but glass ceilings at the same time?
But each have their own set of expectations, if you're an African American and if you're a woman. And I do believe you can object to many of Hillary Clinton's stands and policies in a very legitimate way if you're an opponent. But sometimes it is gendered, some of these attacks, and you can see it. As you have brought up, Mike, that a loud voice is called, let's face it, shrill. Mm-hmm. Whereas even in the primary, Bernie Sanders screamed all the time and didn't get quite the pushback that Hillary Clinton did. So you saw now, 8 years later, she seems much more comfortable in her skin in that way and relating to her work with children and women, which, 8 years ago, it was more, I'm tough.
Well, who is making these unspoken rules? Who is saying that because Hillary, and I've heard it said this campaign season, that when Hillary Clinton is at the podium and she's yelling, because it's a big room, and she's yelling, as men do in big rooms, She's shrill and aggressive, and it's unflattering. Is yeah. that men saying that, or is that women saying that? Because that's what they're accustomed to as well.
Yeah.
Well, a woman using her voice and projecting what is supposedly out of the norms of femininity. It's supposed to be soft-spoken. And but as you point out, in the room of 10,000 people and they're screaming and chanting your name, you have to project your voice. it's just how it's read by people who I would say it's mainly men, because women, many women, especially women in professions and careers and public office and service, know that feeling of addressing the room and projecting your voice and being heard and making yourself heard.
Can I add to that quickly?
Sure.
If I think with the voice issue, that may well be more men than women. And at the same time, studies show that women are just as likely to penalize other women who are seen as aggressive for violating gender norms.
Well, you know, Barbara Streisand, who has distinguished herself in a completely different arena than Hillary Clinton, was often accused of being overly aggressive. Barbara stood, the B stood for Barbara, and it also stood for something else, because she knew precisely what she wanted, and she was bound and determined to get it, particularly when she was directing films. A man could get away with just doing exactly what she did, and no one would have batted an eye.
Yeah.
Is that changing?
Well, part of it will change when there are enough women, people of color, and just diversity in those rooms that are making the decisions.
Yeah.
You see it, whether it's Hollywood with the, you know, Shonda Rhimes making money for the network, so all of a sudden she has that power, to women getting into these positions and in these rooms so they can say, you know what, I see something in that person. Think of it, Mike, if Hillary Clinton is elected, then the head of the Great Britain, Theresa May, Angela Merkel in Germany, and Hillary Clinton, these leaders, world leaders, will be women. So when you have those, you know, pictures of all the people meeting for those conferences, those economic conferences, it will look different. It will be different.
And,
go ahead.
And to Mary's point, it's not just the women. It's the platforms that they represent. And Clinton's platform is really advancing gender equality. And research shows that 31 countries, including the United States, where women are lawmakers, they are far more likely to advance gender equality. In the U.S., Georgetown found that Democratic women and moderate Republican women were far more likely to advance legislation that, for example, addressed child care and domestic violence. So when you see those women at the table, yes, it's significant, but what they're really bringing to the table is advancing equality for everyone, and that speaks to what Clinton talked about when I, you know, break this ceiling, many people are coming along with me.
Historically, traditionally, men have been warriors. It's only been in recent times that any significant number of women have been allowed to be in combat units in the armed forces. But men have been warriors, and they've always taken tough stands, and it has been men who have taken us into war and led us in battle. And if you look at the two conventions, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but if you look at the Republican convention, they were very concerned about security and about taking a tough stand and about increasing our military and being tough, and Donald Trump talks about just going after ISIS and wiping them out. Like that. Maybe he can, maybe he can't. We'll have to wait to see. On the other hand, as you mentioned, Hillary Clinton's convention was softer, gentler, more diplomatic, etc.
Is more that optimistic?
Are the Republicans the men in this equation and the Democrats the females? Does that make any sense?
I would say that's such a simple equation in some ways, because not to contradict you, Mike, and you are such a man. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I just follow your lead. You know that. But you know, the polls have showed that a lot of women who are for Clinton say it's because of the security issue, because they are nurturers of the home in many ways, and they're concerned about families and their children, and they feel she would be stronger in this issue. And then you have this male president, President Barack Obama, who actually has a very strong wife, Michelle Obama, who was, I think, the star of the convention in many ways, two young daughters, the mother-in-law in the White House. And he says, I'm proud to be a feminist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so some of the traditional roles are flipped in many ways. And then you do see, you know, they might have talked in a very bellicose way at the Republican convention, but now you see national security people saying, well, you know, I want more stability And not that volatility. That's what you need in international relations. So it's kind of flipping the script, as you said, Kelly, earlier.
Are we living through a rewriting of the rules?
You know, I could speak to the business sphere a bit to say that in the world of flatter, more team-based organizations, there now is a growing body of literature to suggest that the script is changing, that women may have certain advantages in the workplace as leaders and that people will be more drawn to them because of their style of empowering and coaching individuals. So I definitely would say that's a flip.
Is that happening, or is it just being said that it's better?
Well, in studies, there are women have been rated more strongly as leaders. In there was one pretty prominent study done that looked at men and women along 9 leadership dimensions, and women were outscored the men on 5 of them, and were equal in 2 cases and not in 2. But that suggests a flipping of the script, that people actually see women leaders in some cases more favorably.
So if you want America to be run like a business, should you vote for Hillary Clinton?
I'd say perhaps a little bit simplified.
Clinton brought up both the historical significance of her nomination for both the nation and for women. Is that playing the woman card, or is that simply stating an obvious and historical truth?
Well, it was stating an obvious fact, and also speaking to the significance that women are 50 to 51% of the population, 161 million, as she mentioned. And again, back to her platform, she's speaking to who she's going to represent. And we have a lot of issues, like, you know, Dawn talks about within business, that as a nation, when you talk about, is she going to run it like a business? I hope she runs it like a an equal government, and that it's not just business, it's equal pay. When women are the ones bringing home the paycheck, they need to be paid equally and compensated. We need to address family care and family leave policy. We have so many baby boomers poised and going into retirement, and the sandwich generation, those are the voters coming in now in the 40s, who have to address demands of care on both sides. So, you know, when Clinton comes in, she's not running it just like a business. She's also seeing the responsibility and the role that government plays in making sure that when you are in the business place, you are treated equally, fairly, and have an opportunity to take care of your family.
To build on what Kelly said, some of this is just realizing practically changes that have happened in society, that you do have so many women working, that families depend on it, and some are single women, single head of households. And of course, you are going to want to work and get equal pay, and to work in a place that you don't have to put up with sexual harassment. So some of this is just saying, you know, this is an acknowledgement of where we are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some African Americans voted for President Obama because he was black. Many did not. Many voted either for or against him simply because of policies and politics. How should women regard Hillary Clinton's candidacy? Should gender, or does gender, matter?
Well, you know, when people say, well, did he vote for him because he was black? Well, African Americans have been voting for all white slates of candidates for so many years. So to say, yeah, you finally get a chance to vote for someone who will represent in this way, I don't think that's particularly a bad thing. It probably was a mixture of this person agrees with my policies and wow, what a great symbol. And the same thing with Hillary Clinton. Women have been voting for all male slates of candidates for so many years. So to put this on them, you are forbidden to vote for her because she is a woman, is, I think, a little silly. I mean, what do you think, Dawn?
I think whether people will vote, women will vote for Hillary because she's a woman is a personal choice. And I think it is unfair to say, you know, don't make that part of your decision, because it's an exciting moment in history that there is that choice.
But there have been women in office. You mentioned Thatcher earlier, who, again, that is a great example of it's the woman, and that, you know, but it wasn't the platform that favored gender equality in that case in Great Britain. So you know, I caution people, especially in this election, but all elections, you know, yes, consider the person, but far more important is consider the platform and the policies and the party. And look at how the parties have deadlocked us for the past 8 to 12 years in particular. So your vote needs to be very strategic and intelligent in that regard. It's not just the person you're voting for. It's all the way down the ticket, too, that we need to consider.
Well, we saw that in 2008 with John McCain putting Sarah Palin on the ticket. I think, you know, because Hillary Clinton had lost, he was thinking, well, now women will come to me. But that definitely, because of the platform, because of her personality and many other things, it actually, I think, caused some folks to back off.
But if you're not if you're a female and you don't support Hillary Clinton, how should you feel about that? Should you be happy that you don't support her because you simply don't believe in her, you don't trust her, and you don't support her politics? Or should you be unhappy that you can't support her because she, like you, is a woman? How should you feel about it? Or does that matter?
I would have a hard time understanding how, especially when it considers some of the issues that Clinton is taking on, how women can at least get behind some of them. Campus sexual assault, LGBT issues, racial justice and equality, gender pay and equity, family care and medical care, Medicaid, and on and on and on. And so you look like this down this laundry list, and if a woman says, well, I can't get behind that, then I would think to myself, well, what are you passionate about? What really is affecting your family and your wallet? Because every single one of these issues directly impacts
your
life.
But there are a lot of conservatives who don't agree with any of those issues.
That is true.
If you're a conservative woman, you might not agree simply because you're a conservative. How should you feel about that? Should you feel any guilt about not supporting the first woman candidate for president and what that might do for the future of women in America?
You get in that booth and that's your choice.
Okay. Yeah.
And I would not sit here and tell any human being how to feel.
Former North Carolina Secretary of State Elaine Marshall has said that having a woman at the top of the ticket means that instead of just having a voice at the table, this time we are at the head of the table. If her election comes to pass and she does a reasonably good job, will that automatically mean that women will be at the heads of other tables in America?
Definitely not.
So the fact that we have fact that we say 2 years from now she's been the president for 2 years and we're in reasonably good shape and the economy hasn't fallen into the toilet, etc. Business leaders won't say, you know, if we can have a woman running the country, we could certainly have a woman running this company.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I would say no. I think there's so many, even though she is a very symbolic individual, and this is this historic moment, there are still so many barriers facing women in business, none of which can really be solved by this problem or this opportunity.
Because they're not in the pipeline?
They're not in the pipeline. There are unconscious biases on the part of men and women toward favoring men in leadership roles. Women are still more likely to take on the lion's share of childcare and other domestic responsibilities. So there are just barriers that we need to get past as a whole society before we can really elevate women.
Could a woman in the White House, whether it's Hillary Clinton this time or Republican 4 years from now or whatever, could that speed the process? Maybe you won't wake up the next morning and suddenly all the major companies are headed by women, but could it speed the dissolution of some of these good old boy networks at the bottom of the pile that will suddenly be open to allowing women into the club and then they can move up the ladder because they built their social networks, etc.?
You know, I'm going to defer to your points largely, except, but I would say that it depends on some of the policies that are enacted and how they favor gender equality. So
exactly. I mean, if Clinton, you know, said in 2 years from now, what will it look like? Will it open up, you know, inroads for women to achieve leadership? Well, my point would be if she does policies that make it easier to be a woman in leadership when it comes to family care and policy.
And for that, she would obviously have to get the cooperation of the Congress.
Exactly.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
But I still think
we have to stop. We have to go take a break. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia, featuring the 2016 Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. And Carolina Pest Management, protecting homes, families, and businesses since 1939, offering botanical-based mosquito and pest services, plus termite and moisture control options. CarolinaPest.com. After a rocky couple of weeks for his campaign, Donald Trump releases his new economic plan. So on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, we'll get analysis of his proposals on taxes, trade, and financial regulation, and how he's distinguishing himself from Hillary Clinton. We're talking about her and the glass ceiling. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
As WFAE works to provide full coverage of the upcoming presidential election, we hope you'll consider everything you hear on WFAE and will consider making a donation of any amount today. More than half of our budget comes from listeners like you. Your donation now will ensure that we have the funds necessary to provide full coverage of the November elections and beyond. Call 704-549-9000 or donate online at WFAE.org. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the shattering of the glass ceiling by Hillary Clinton and what it might mean for women in other fields of work, including politics, though, with Dawn Chandler. Dr. Dawn Chandler, Associate Professor of Management at McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte. Mary C. Curtis, a journalist and columnist with Roll Call, NBCBLK, and NPR's Code Switch. And Kelly Findlay, a Senior Lecturer and Undergraduate Advisor in Women's and Gender Study at UNC Charlotte. Let me share with you some of the things that people have been asking and talking about on social media as we've been talking. Jenny writes, how much do you think Hillary's unfavorable ratings, especially with white males, are due to misogyny, however you want to say it, even though people surveyed attribute negative ratings to other causes, such as her email server, etc.? What implications can we read into any such merging of categories for women today? Many younger women don't, of course, realize that sexism still exists, or for that matter, how far women Hillary's age have brought the movement. So many questions there, many questions.
Well, as I said before, I think you can be legitimately upset at some things Hillary Clinton has done or some of her positions on issues. But I do think looking at her and you look at these rallies against her, and so many of the attacks are also gendered. So that's a piece of it. You see signs calling her the B word and people yelling things out that seem more against who she is than what she believes. So it's hard to tear that apart. And I think she is this pioneer. So being the first is also something that she has to deal with.
Yeah. And Mike, there's a term that I think is a great litmus test for that, which your emailer asked about, aversive sexism or aversive racism, where let's say when Clinton, you know, throws her hat in the ring and people say, well, I don't like her, and then they go and find out why they don't like her, then that's aversive sexism. Or you could say the same thing for Obama, where I don't like him. Well, why don't you like them? And then they're going to now go exhaust their energy versus I'm neutral about this individual. Let me look at their policies, and then I've decided I don't agree with their policies. Mm-hmm. And those are two very different things. So when you see someone have this knee-jerk reaction, I just don't like her, I would raise an eyebrow to that and be quite critical of that critique.
And that's not going to change if she wins.
No, it won't.
It might be magnified. No. Just as I think the people who had some racial objections to Barack Obama Becoming the president, having a black man in the White House, that has been amplified by his presence there for 8 years, no matter what he does or doesn't do or says or doesn't say. So are you concerned about a backlash if she wins?
Backlash will happen, but just to what Obama has done, that it doesn't stop you. and we're not going to stop, you know, pushing for progress and social justice and equality. And so Obama has handled it and his entire family with grace and dignity. And still look, I mean, when we go back and audit what Obama's success has been, we're going to be well impressed. He pulled us back from the brink of economic ruin when he first took office. And he's issued in a major legislative overhaul of medical insurance. For all its critiques, it was a major undertaking. So, you know, even though he experienced backlash, he was still as effective as he could be with a very adversarial Congress. And I think Clinton's going to have the same thing. The interesting thing is going to be, what is she going to put her political capital in, and what is she going to invest her time in?
Yeah, the history books will look at, say, the birther movement with shame. So, yes, there are people who made things up that had nothing to do with his policy, so they had to find it, and they went to crazy lengths, like he wasn't born in this country. And so it's the same way, you know.
Dennis in Mooresville writes, have your guests heard or even seen surveys showing Hillary with unfavorable numbers when running for something like the Senate, but very favorable numbers when in office as a senator?
Oh, yes. You know, when she left as Secretary of State, she had, you know, sky high in the 60s, 70s approval ratings. And even some of her adversaries now in the Senate will say, as a senator, folks like John McCain, that she worked with them quite well. And she compromised, and she was a great senator. Of course, you're not hearing that now. And there's nothing to think that she won't try to be that collaborative partner if she were elected president. So I have seen those surveys.
Mm-hmm. Barbara writes, people love President Obama's ability to calm any baby, relate to any child, comfort anyone facing a hardship, and the photos that show them. Most of the vitriol I run into about Hillary Clinton is from other women. Would it help if she added some softer images to her current "she's a strong leader" ads?
I think she has. I also think it's been kind of interesting to see what the media chooses to feature in their spin cycle and who's sucking the air out of the room so many times. But she has had those moments when she has talked about her relationship as a mother, as a grandmother, as a daughter, and has related to people. And we all remember in 08 when she kind of broke down a little bit. But, you know, you're kind of darned if you do and darned if you don't as a woman in that situation. So, and she's.
That's right. And that's also makes it different for women running for office and different for women trying to become heads of corporations. Mm-hmm. There are different sets of expectations, rightfully or wrongfully. Will we ever get past them, do you think?
I believe we will, and it will just take time and policies and business practices that support evolving mindsets and move us in a direction where we see a broader array or style of leader, or we accept and embrace a broader array of leadership styles and different people in different leadership roles, because there still is a bias in favor of men in leadership roles. Mm-hmm. There was a recent study by Yale where it showed equally qualified. It was the same resume, but there was a man's name put on it and a woman's name put on it. And people were more likely to favor the man just by way of name.
Siobhan on Twitter writes, so often feminism is looked at through the lens of white women. Can your guests talk about extra ceilings for women of color?
Mary. As a woman of color, yes. And you see that, and you saw that a bit play out in 2008 when it was Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama, and there were some white feminists. And I actually got into a little bit of a back and forth when I wrote in the Washington Post about white women feminists not coming to the aid of all the stuff that was being thrown Michelle Obama's way. Mm-hmm. And there was some pushback and women saying, well, you know, party unity, my you know what, and we're not going to vote for Barack Obama. And there are those extra sort of ceilings. And that's one thing. Hillary Clinton is really going to need the support of African-American women who were the backbone of the Obama campaign. They not only voted higher than their demographic, they worked and they brought their families and their registered voters. And you see her reaching out. But yes, they do have some differences. It's not just one big happy feminist party there. And you'll see her reaching out. Now, she was asked at the National Association of Black Journalists and Hispanic Journalists joint conference that I attended, and she spoke with about African-American friends that she had learned from, and she talked about folks who had been her chiefs of staff and she had worked with, and she has been had these friendships for 50 years. But that was an interesting moment.
In 1997, Hillary Clinton went to China, and there was much made of her statement when she was in China, when she said, "Women's rights are human rights, and human rights are women's rights." It was a landmark statement for a first lady to make. It was a landmark statement, I think, for a Westerner to make in China about human rights. So she was way ahead of the game in that time period. And in speeches that she has made both at the convention and since the convention, she says has said that she's brought up a number of women's issues. And she said that if playing the gender card means fighting for equal pay and women's health care, then deal me in. Does that help or hurt her?
It certainly helps. You know, when you think about, she has always seen the experience of women and girls, but also the violence that has, you know, has had a global impact. And so when she talked about, you know, human rights are women's rights and vice versa, you know, we will get up in arms when we see human rights violations, rightfully so. But look at the sexual trafficking of women and girls, the sexual violence against women and girls. And we call that a, you know, a cultural issue or none of our business. And look at it going on in our own country here. So it absolutely will make a difference to have someone like Clinton in office who is aware of this on the global stage and the domestic stage as well.
Is sexism, where would you rank sexism versus racism in America? Which is the stronger negative?
I don't think you can untangle them. There's a great feminist who said at one point, you can't be, for example, a woman on Monday, Latina on Tuesday, disabled on Wednesday, and a mother on Thursday, and so forth. And we, in the classroom, we call that intersectionality, but we can just call it interconnected. Discrimination and exploitation is all interconnected. And so liberation needs to be interconnected.
But we have a sorry history of racial relations in this country, and it goes back 600 years, and we don't need to go into it because we all know why. But it can be legitimately said by some people even today that they don't know personally a black person. A white person could say that in some parts of this country because they simply know black people living there. So that, it would seem to me, would inflame racism because what you don't know is fearful. You fear it. But everybody has a mother. So why is sexism equal to racism?
Well, as I said, I don't think it's a grievance lottery, you know, or contest. When I get up and look in the mirror in the morning, I'm not a woman one day and a black person the next. It's all connected. And it is true that you see sometimes there's movement on the LGBT issue or sexism issue because people can look at the dinner table and look across and say, that's in my family. But I don't think you can really tease these out because, you know, it's true, you know, when women say you should lean in more as an African American, if you lean in, that's seen as being more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And so the rules don't apply to you. But I think they are, as Kelly said, interconnected. And we can't parse out this is a woman's issue, this is a cultural issue, this is an African American issue, because we're all affected by it. When it comes down to it, our society is affected by it, and we're not getting the potential of all these people in society who could help make things better for all of us when we start having a contest on whose hurt is worse. So that's just spinning our wheels and wasting energy on something that ultimately is not going to move us ahead. Mm-hmm. So we have to all see this as all of these things being our problem. No, we're not there yet. But we won't get there by arguing over things. But it would be great if when you see this with the young people, when these Black Lives Matter group there, it's an integrated group.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
diverse. And that's something to look at because they realize that in some ways. So that's our future.
Sexual harassment is back in the news during this election cycle because of Roger Ailes being forced to resign from Fox News because of allegedly harassing several female, high-profile female employees at that. Donald Trump has said that he hopes that if his daughter experienced that kind of harassment, she would look for another job. Aside from indicating a certain amount of tone deafness on the issue, on his part. Is that also a glimpse into the minds of a lot of men in power?
Definitely. I mean, it's such a ridiculous assumption to say that a woman should leave her job when she experienced sexual harassment. That's like telling someone they should move when somebody breaks into their home. No, they should avail themselves of the law and justice and seek, you know, fair treatment and protection under the law, just as a woman who experiences sexual harassment should call out the harasser. And so this goes back to the victim blaming, you know, mentality. And not only that, the class and race privilege of being able to move and leave your company and go to another. A woman who's working at Wendy's is not going to be able to just go and leave when she's living paycheck to paycheck because she's being sexually harassed by her boss. And not only that, there'd be a mass exodus of every single corporation in the United States if women were to walk out because they're experiencing harassment.
So you're the business professor here. How prevalent is Donald Trump's attitude among business professionals?
That is an empirical question. I'm not sure exactly how to answer that. I would say my hope would be that most people were inflamed by that comment and felt that it was a very misunderstood moment for all women.
So does the reality of a Trump-Clinton contest and the comment that Donald Trump made about Roger Ailes and harassment, is this providing an opportunity, there's the word, for conversation about this? So the presence of Hillary Clinton in this race has raised that opportunity, essentially.
You go ahead.
Well, it just shows that just because a woman is being nominated by a major political party that these issues have not disappeared. But it does open us up to have more conversations about it, not just about what's going wrong, but the fact that even if people move to a different job, that we are losing all the potential and all the talent of women or men who are also sexually harassed who are moving to other places. And so we're not getting that. So this is definitely basically, you got a choice. You do have a choice. When I heard him say that, I said, yeah, I don't think many people who work for the Trump organizations are going to start, you know, harassing Ivanka Trump.
Right. So, question for Kelly from one of our listeners. Where is the feminist movement now, and where is it headed? And you have 30 seconds.
Feminism is alive and strong. The Washington Post did a study in January and found 70% of people said feminism is empowered. 6 in 10 women say that they identify as feminist, and one in three men say they're feminist too.
And the Post also conducted a poll with the Kaiser Family Foundation that shows that an equal number of women believe that the biggest factor keeping women from achieving full equality with men are both the choices women make themselves and discrimination against them. Choices? I mean, to have children and to leave the business world for a time period? Is that what they're talking about there?
They are, but you don't have a choice when you have to pick between taking care of your family and having a career.
Kelly Finley, Senior Lecturer and Undergraduate Advisor with the Women's and Gender Studies Program at UNC Charlotte, Dr. Dawn Chandler with the McCall School of Business at Queen's University of Charlotte, and Mary C. Curtis, Journalist. Thank you all.